This media has been presented to you by the Maryland Men of Faith, where men are challenged and encouraged to form the character of Christ. For more information, please visit mmof.org.
Well, I wish we have time, a little bit, to take time to introduce each other. And we don't. That's not good, you know. The best presentations are that people listen when we introduce and get to know each other. But we don't have time. I just have 1 hour. So forgive me, let me go through. The title is God Gifted Us Sex. Why then the confusion? That is the title we have. So, my first thing is, why do we have so much misunderstanding and confusion about sex? One of the thing is that we learn this sex from our family, our school, church, society, and friends, and so on. This is where we live. But because we learned from various resources that we think it's mysterious. The sex is mysterious, and it is not a suitable topic to discuss. So we avoid those things in our family. I hope it will work for me. Okay, there it is. So sex is always advertised in magazines and TVs, something that is very mysterious, and it is something very sensible, and it's very secret, you know. And we all become very curious because of that. Another reason is that we also have lack of anatomical understanding how our body works, how our psychological mind works, how our spiritual and sexual mind work. We are all sexual beings, we are all social beings, we are all spiritual beings, because God created us a whole being, not just one part. Sometimes we think the spirituality is the only thing God created us. No, we are a whole being. God has created us to enjoy and to have fun in this world, at the same time glorify Him in our way of living. So, because of this misunderstanding, people believe sex is a sin and it is dirty. It is consequence of sin. I'm going to, like I introduce myself, as I go by, you will understand the theology of sex. The sex is not a sin, you know. And I always tell people, having a knife in the house is not a sin, it is not dangerous. Because I have at least 7 or 8 knives. So, it is not a sin, it is not dangerous. Can it be dangerous? Yes. Can it be the evil? Yes. It's all happen how we use it, no? God has gifted us with sex, the gift of sex. But how we use is the issue. That is where the sin is. So the first thing that we all have to understand is the sex is not sin. All the information we have gathered about the sexual relationship have created confusion, negative sexual etiquette in our mind. You know, all the information we have gathered. When did we have sit with our pastors? We talked about sex. Is it a good thing? Never. Our mother and father. We don't do those things. So sex is always a learned behavior. This is one of the very important word in psychology. Behaviors are learned. You know, I like what Carl said this morning, you know. We learn to brush our teeth. We learn to tie our shoe. Who taught you how to have sex? Your father, mother? No. But sex is a learned behavior. We learn it in the wrong place, at the wrong time, from the wrong people. So we do it wrongly. See? It's a learned behavior. So it is a very, very important to know sex is a learned behavior. The image, because of that you and I have, is a wrong image. Okay. Now you have seen a lot of animals here. Now if I say it elephant, if I say a lion, you see a lion right there. But if I say elephant, can you see an elephant in your mind? It is not there. We all think not in words, in pictures. That is the reason Microsoft has icons. You see, we all think in pictures. So what is the picture you have about sex? Where did you get that picture? Is the key. So, when you are involved with sexuality, with your girlfriend, with your fiancé, with your wife, whoever it is, that picture is the one that is guiding you. If the picture is a wrong picture in your mind, and you learned a wrong behavior, a wrong way of doing it, you're going to do it thinking it is the right way. Thinking that is the right way. So there is two things in psychology we say. One is the conscious, what is unconscious. Conscious is you know that you are doing the right thing or wrong thing. Unconscious, you don't know that you are doing right or wrong. It is right there. So you have learned all this all throughout your life, and it became very unconscious within yourself. It automatically comes. That is where the sex has been an issue. So, now I think I had clients, the family talk about sex, that they don't allow the younger people to get involved in sexual conversation. If they do, they punish. Now, I am as a family therapist myself, as a clinical psychologist myself. When we have adolescent or young people problem, we bring the family together, you know. And we told our son to not to talk about the sex, but he keep talking. I want you to tell him not to talk about it. You see? So, they always put something wrong about that in our mind, you know. But then what creates that? A natural curiosity, you know. I don't have grandchildren big enough. I have just one grandchild, he's 5 months old. But I had a son and a daughter, you know. I remember that if I say something I have in the refrigerator for the Sabbath, you are not supposed to eat that ice cream for the Sabbath, what they want to do? Well, they just want to open the refrigerator, put their finger. That's good. It is Sabbath. I am ready for it. Then they go around, come again. There is a paradoxical effect. There is a curiosity in it. So, somewhere we all have to take the responsibility that we have been misled or we are misleading our children. Both ways. Because we are misled in the past by our community, our parents, our society, we don't know how to lead our children. We are leading them, misleading it. So it's very, very important to understand the concept. At the same time, a feeling of guilt is awakened because of this. And there is the gift of sexuality cannot be feel and understood. So because of this, misunderstanding is already created within us, whether we are adult or young. That there is always a feeling of guilt when you are doing it or when you are thinking about it, and it creates very anxiety within you, anxiousness. So there is palpitation in your chest, you have difficulty in breathing, and you want to hide yourself, and you don't want to talk about it, and then you want to build up stories. So in other words, not only that we cannot believe or accept sex as a gift, but also our perception are distorted. So it is very, very important to understand. I already told about this. There is a paradoxical effect. I gave you the ice cream analogy. So the sexual image is loud and clear. It comes from our homes. It comes from our home. A daughter learns a great deal about women and sexuality by observing her mother. Why do I talk about mother and daughter when we have men's conference? It is very, very important. Because the other partner in sexuality is a woman. So, she learns from her mother whether sex is fun and satisfying or burden to be endured. Or she learns it is a male conspiracy to be avoided. And it is do it, it is not to accept in grace. 6 months ago, I had a young lady, 27 years old. She is a pastor, by the way, from another church. And she is going through mentorship under me. I teach for people in pastoral counseling. And she's one of my students. She came and said, Dr. Arun, I have a problem with my marriage. I'm only married 6 months. My husband, I had never had sex. Last 6 months, I never had. First night, I'm thinking of divorcing him. Never had. Now, this man have had bad experience in his home with his father and mother, and he has learned that woman's vagina is dirty and should not look at it. And that is what he has learned. So he gets shivering, he gets very difficult coming closer to her. But he wants to be in the marriage. And he is well educated, MBA accountant, and he works for the government, makes good money. But he cannot. He cannot have it because of what he has learned from that. So it's very, very important for us to understand that we learn a lot of things from our mothers. And all the men have observed their mothers, other females in their homes. A father uses the mother as a sexual object or express his love and affection publicly. In homes where the father has difficulty expressing emotion, and the children grow up with experience, difficulty expressing them sexually. So if you don't have, the children are being hugged and kissed and shown love and affection, they grow up in difficulties showing that. My daughter, when she went to Wisconsin Academy to study, they had a hard time. My son had a hard time. Now she's married and I have a child. The other day, I was talking to her and I asked, because she has a son now, I'm just putting thought that somehow the son has to go to Adventist school and the university and all that. Slowly I'm getting that subject into her mind. I asked her, what was the difficult thing that you found when you went to the Wisconsin? What is it? He said, one of the difficult thing that I missed is the hugs from you and mother. You guys always hug us. And it was very hard to get up and not to see your face, get the hug and smile. You see that? It is very, very important that relationship is the foundation of Christianity. Relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, relationship with one another. That is the only two commandments God gave us. Love your God, love your neighbor. Your neighbor is one who is in need. Your wife and your children. If you have two, give one. First, you have to have two. If you have one, give to your family. You see that? That concept is always there. Theological concept is always there. So it is very important that sometimes we are misled and we need to relearn these things again. The research consistently shows us a poor parent-adolescent relationship defined as adolescent perception of little warmer support, closeness in the relationship with their parents is associated with a higher likelihood of engaging in sexual behavior at an earlier age. So people who have not had this experience and they have a natural inclination for love, they want to seek it. About 10 years ago, I was in Ohio conference working there. A family came. It's an Adventist family. They lived next to each other. When they came from their work, usually there's a time for parents to come. The children knew exactly what time they come. So everything is neat and clean. They are good boys and girls, you know. I know about my children too when they were young, you know. As soon as I go to work, the TV is on. They know at what time coming, everything is clean and neat. TV is on. They are with the books. Children know that. So these parents didn't tell something happened in the work. One of the parents came home early. Opened the door. Two girls and two boys next door. Brothers and sisters in this family and that family, each other having each other, not his own sister, the next door sister having, they are in 12, 13 years, experience in sexual behaviors. They fell apart. They don't know what to do. How did they learn? Because the parents are doing it. publicly. They are watching TV, sexual films. Children saw that. And when they are not, they are watching it too, playing it. You see that? So now the issue is, the children have directly not experienced it. Now suddenly they get involved, they feel a connection with each other. They want to do it more. That's how it happens. Everything, something that we want to do, we do it in the wrong way, we end up in trouble. God has given us that warmth and love and connection within us, but it has to be used in a healthy way, not in an unhealthy way. This is the key. Learn to eat healthy way, pray and preach in healthy way, pray in healthy way. So it is very, very important what God has given to us, that we use it. Of course, I will talk in a little bit about the sin, how that has destroyed our thinking and the way that we do things. And next one is sexuality is the basics. Sexuality is the part of our children. They are born with it. It is given to them by God. And sexuality develops and changes throughout their life, from the time of their beginning. Now, I have a 5-month son my grandson. And it's funny that 4 months he didn't have any problem. Now he is moving into 5 and a half months. And he is touching his hand. He is touching his leg. And when you are changing the diaper, he is touching his... Yeah, he's touching it. Mother says, no, no, no. I said, don't say that. Don't say no, no, no. You're already telling him it's wrong. What is wrong? There's nothing wrong in it. You know, he said, no, 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 no. He didn't even hear the word yes yet. And she's a Seventh-day Adventist. You see that? So it's very, very important that we all have becoming feeling comfortable with the sexuality, and sexual identity is essential to our children's development. And we need to understand that. It is very, very important to understand that. Now, having said that, the flip the other side, did you have that kind of childhood? If not, you probably have to relearn that too. Did your wife had a girlfriend? Then you have to relearn. This is what the dating is so important, even though dating has become kind of confused and distorted. But dating is about learning about each other and learning about the God's will, how to have a good family. It's very, very important. And I have given one, I have 3 weddings this year. I just finished one. I said, I can't give you marriage if I don't counsel you. Oh, our previous pastor never counseled. He just married. We don't have time for it. So I don't have time to marry you then. I told him, I don't have time to marry. Yes, sir.
Well, I hear what you're saying about someone being comfortable with their own sexuality. With our children, I'm thinking that becoming too comfortable with yourself will lead to activities that aren't positive. So I'm kind of...
Okay. We'll come back and answer your question. When I finish this presentation, let me come back and take some questions on that, okay? So, when we are saying feeling comfortable with our sexuality and sexual identity, it's essential to our child's healthy development. So, like I said, my son, I don't need to become negative toward my grandson. Neither you need to become uncomfortable about your sexuality. Because when you are become uncomfortable in your sexuality, you think everybody else has to be uncomfortable, and you will make them uncomfortable. You see, So when I first joined about 30 years ago, Joseph is here. He's the guy first time took me to Ohio for my training as a chaplain training. When I went there, my psychological supervisor looked at me and said, and after 6 months he said, Arunan, you have a strong accent. And you need to work on that. Otherwise, you are not going to survive in the United States. So, I said, okay. So they gave me a person to go and all that stuff. So I went there and they tried to teach me. I went to two sessions, okay. They are trying to teach me. I became very uncomfortable, you know. So I also supposed to have another supervisor as a mentor psychologist. And I went to him and talked about, and he said, embrace who you are. Be who you are. You don't need to change. Is it against the sin of God? I said, no. So I kept to myself with my accent still. I got laid off 3 times because of my accent too. And they told me because of that too. And it's okay. And it's okay. The Lord has never let me down, you know. You know, He never let me down. So it is me becoming comfortable mean it is not I am exposing myself. Being comfortable emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, it is given by God. I think I went fast. Your children's belief and expectation about sex and sexuality are influenced by their personal experience, upbringing, religious and cultural background. That is what I have been talking to you all this time. So, this experience they have or I have are gathered from the community and the TV and other people and the movies. Now, I originally came from a Hindu family. I converted when I was 12 years. My father was a film producer in my country. Well-to-do, very nice man. He had a PhD from Oxford University. My mother wasn't. She has only high school. But I have never seen them hugging or kissing. They are Hindus. They don't do it. The culture doesn't allow. They don't even hold hand publicly. They don't sit together. Never talked about sex. So I grew up not knowing anything. I was ignorant. And this, after coming to this country only, I learned a lot of things. I came when I was 33 years old. I'm now 60. So I learned a lot of things in this country. So a lot of us grow up like that. That is the truth. That is the truth. And here is the other part of this. The other problem that we have sexuality is, what time we are supposed to finish? I better be mindful of that. 10:45. Okay. Sensational sexual events in our family, kidnapping, molestation, rape. These traumatic events affects one's perception and attitude of their whole sexual world. So something happened in our family, or something happened in the community, and some community, very often it happens. Or now we have TV, it brings up everything that happens all over the places. That creates something in us too, the traumatic things. So it all gives us a negative impression all the time, and it becomes an issue when it comes. So the influence of the religion and the church avoids talking about the sex as a God-given gift and teaching healthy sexual behaviors. We don't talk. We don't even talk about, we don't want to discuss, we don't want to do it. And then there are different cultures and different way of doing things they don't talk about. It only teaches us to keep us pure and not to get involved in sex. That is the only. No, no, no. My daughters. No, no, no. We always say no because it comes from the Ten Commandments, you know. Thou shalt not. Thou shalt not, thou shalt not. We have learned that. We have not learned what God gave us in a precise manner for us to think and explore in a higher level. What is God is saying? We never understood that. So, sex has a misunderstanding of theology of sex as it is consequence of sin. Because of this, the theology of sex that we think sex is sin. I told in the introduction, theology of sex. Theology of Sabbath, theology of Second Coming, theology of health living, theology of everything. The theology of sex, that understanding is unconsciously, is a learned thing, is it is a sin. I want to show you quickly in the Bible, it is not. Our early understanding and experience and wrong sex education and perception bring us confusion and misunderstanding. Sex and sexuality is a precious gift from Creator. God created male and female with the anatomy and created us in His image and never felt ashamed before sin. Men never, we never felt. We are created in His image. Here is the second one. The physical union is a gift of God. what God has given us is a physical unity, gift of God. Sexual relationships are gift of God. Emotional, spiritual relationships are gift of God. Love making is physical, emotional, and spiritual. I'm going to give you a Bible verse for you to look at it. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united in his wife. They will become
one flesh.
One flesh means having sex. Yes. Becoming one flesh refers to sexual intercourse. You see that? It is God planned. It has happened before the sin, after sin.
Before
sin. So God created, gave his image, and then he said, you are man and woman, you are in my image, you are going to become one flesh. He put it in us, that gene, that desire in us. He did it. That you went to the store and bought that nice knife to cut the vegetable because you liked it. Now you are angry, you want to kill your wife and your children. God put it in you. Now because of your sin and your distorted, you want to misuse it? Destroy you and others? That's the question. It is given by God. It is given by God. In account, we know, before any report of sin, God called one flesh. Additionally, the man and his wife were both naked and they felt no shame. So I told the earlier story of a woman pastor, she's married to an accountant, you know. The guy is shivering, you know, he couldn't. Because of the distorted, the sin, and what he has gone through in his life, now he's feeling that way. So the foundation of male-female relationship in marriage, sexual, emotional, perceptual, and experiential, biological, and neurological. The sexual relationship is emotional, it's a perceptual, experiential, biological and neurological. And I know the men have come to me for counseling that they cannot have an erection. It's a neurological thing. They have lost it because of their misbehaviors, misuse of. Of course, you know, if you have an accident and if you have certain kind of disease, you will lose it neurologically too. But this particular case I am referring is because of the misbehavior. Our sexuality is a part of our total being, not merely a physical, fleshy or evil part of us. It reflects the image of God in us. It just gives us the image of God. So, I always think if I misbehave, if I am created in image of God, I am also misrepresenting God too. And it's very, very important. When Adam and Eve committed sin, communication and connections between God and human were interrupted. Communication, connection between Adam and Eve were interrupted. Human to human was interrupted. Open and unashamed communication became and they stopped. So when sin entered, that relationship got disrupted. The next slide, I think next slide, Adam and Eve were hiding their genital with leaves. Did you ever thought why they had when they became sin, they have to hide? Did you ever thought about that city? What are they hiding? Did you ever thought about it? I never, when I was in the seminary. Yeah, I read several times, they taught me several times, I had several Bibles, I never thought. It took some time for me to learn in psychological field, learn. Yeah, pastoral psychology teaches this. Yeah. Why they have to hide? Oh, now they can see the genitals, you know. You know, they can see the genitals. It is sin that is the one is evil, not sex. It's not the sex. Sin is evil. So sin, that evil, can be in your communication. It can be in sexual behavior. Sin can be anything that you do. So you cannot, and I cannot, put it sex is sin. No, even the unhealthy communication is sin. Unhealthy way of having sex is also with unhealthy people is a problem. So hiding and feeling shame And sex is related now because of that. So it's very, very important for us to understand that. Husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. Husbands are love their wife. If you take the word love, the husbands are supposed to have compassion and kindness and connection with their wives as the Lord. The Lord has compassion, grace, and relationship with us. That's what this love means. Love is a simple word you have to unpack. There's a lot of grace in it, a lot of compassion in it, a lot of kindness in it, a lot of understanding in it. It's a relationship. So when sex is a gift from God, when you are spiritual, you don't need to withhold or reduce sexual pleasure. It doesn't make you more holy. And sometimes that people ask this question, you know, is it right to have sex on Friday night? Is it right to have sex on Sabbath? This is one of the very powerful questions on very similar among Christians, not only Adventists, among Christians. It's a powerful seminar. It's a powerful seminar, you know. They ask that question. What do you think? Why he didn't create us on Thursday, first night, you know? You know, he created on Friday. But if you go back to history of Sabbath, people cooked and kept the food ready. They slept. The children are sleeping. The husband and wife spend a lot of time, have a lot of sex on Sabbath morning. They spend a lot of time together praying and loving each other and loving the Lord, and children gets up and then they feed the children. They have worship, loving and praying together. The evening they go and worship. That's the old history of Jewish. That's how they do it. Well, now we have all this program, no? We have to go Friday. I have a church. We go to Friday. The church is over at 10 o'clock, 8 o'clock Sabbath morning prayer. And nobody comes on time, you know. And they have a fight on their way. And, you know, all this stuff happens and then they come happy Sabbath. What happy is that? It's a hell in the car. Therefore, evil comes from the misuse of sex. Not because sexual desire to bring pleasure. It's a misuse of things. Anything misuse is not going to bring pleasure. It is anything that we have. So I'm going to talk a little more into the psychology, the ego of Satan and human. That word ego refers to exaggerated sense of self-importance. The result is excessive preoccupation with self. Now, my tendency is to go to politics, but I'm afraid, you know. And you see the politicians, let me use a plural word. Politicians, if you see them, very excessive, you know. I don't know this truth that they say that when the senators goes in the elevator, there will be congressmen, they won't talk to each other. Because senators think they are bigger than the congressmen, so they don't talk. You know? It is in the church too, you know. If you go big meetings in the church, the higher level people will not talk to the lower level pastors, you know. You know? It's a ego. Centric we are, you know, egocentric, self-important. I am very, very important, you know that? I don't talk to anybody because of that. You know? We can trace the ego all the way back to the Garden of Eden, where Eve became encouraged by Satan's lie that she should become like who? God. Like God. So, Satan did the first thing. I want to be like God. I'm going to make you also like God, and I need more people in my team. So your friend will tell, hey, I'm going to do this. I want you to come. Because he doesn't want to do it alone. He wants more people with him so he can commit the sin and everybody can share. He's not alone. Or she's not alone. You see that? So Satan recruited Eve for evilness. The ego comes like that. Then everybody goes to work on Monday. You know, last night we had fun with all our friends. Ego. So the ego is the one that always Satan touched it. He gets into our heart. He makes us feel very, very important that we need to have fun. We need to have pleasure. This is how you are going to be a very, very important person. You know, sometimes I see young people, you know, take a cigarette. I'm very important now, big man, eh? No, you're stupid, you know. But he thinks he's very important because of the cigarette. And that is a problem here, you know. So Satan has created us in ego. So ego has to do with our sexual sin. It makes us important, and it also helps us to get attraction to other people. You did it last night with her? I did it. You want to know how to do it? Very important, you know. And then the text message goes and email goes. Hey, I heard this. Is it true? You see that what happens? That's what Satan got. We can trace our ego back to all the way to God. Garden of Eden. So, when that sin comes and mixed with, it becomes a lust rather than love. Rather than love, it becomes a lust. So, lust pretends sex and pleasure are for one person, not for two people. Lust makes sexual pleasure all about me. It is a self-gratification project. Now, who is eliminated in it? God is eliminated. Who else? Sexual partner is eliminated. It is about me. It's all about me. So this feature of lust more than any other puts it in opposition to well-ordered sexual enjoyment. What God created is gone now. It's the two people together having that relationship and enjoying together. So in lust, sexual pleasure is divorced from mutual self-giving. What my pleasure says, that lustful one, I want it now. I need it now. I want it now. And I don't know how many of you, there are stories that people have killed each other because of this. I want it now and you're not giving it, I'm going to kill you. And that's how all the sexual sin and crimes are happening. I need it now, you're not going to, I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it the way I wanted it. So the sexual desire and lust are not the same thing. The difference is the sexual desire in its proper place and expression is vital and good part of our humanity. In lust, however, we fail to respect our own dignity and the dignity of our partner. You see, it is very, very important to understand that. Lust is impulsive. Love takes time. Love takes time. You know, lust is impulsive. You say that when a pastor goes to a church, do you know how many years it gets for him to establish that love with the members? Anybody knows? 5 years. 5 years. Absolutely right. It takes 5 years for a pastor to establish. And the conference tells us, go after 3 years to another church, you know. You will never establish any relationship. Yeah, I like that. So, the love is the root of delayed gratification. While lust is rooted in instant pleasure, lust feels like sprinting, love feels like a marathon, love means acceptance, lust means intelligence. So, that's where the problem is. You see that? It is the ego, the I am the one. The I is the issue here now. That is where the sin becomes. It is not the sex. It is I, the ego. It's the lust is a psychological force producing intense wanting or longing for an object or circumstance fulfilling the emotion. So the lust, love need a person with feeling and connection. Lust want an object. Now if you see that, love want what? Objects. So, men used to use women as an object. If they don't have that woman, X as an object, where they go? They go and buy an object in the store to use it. You see? So, there is not, that object does not have feeling. You see that? So the young man, woman who doesn't have a partner, they use the object after the marriage, the woman is object too. You see that? So that's how the sin is created in us. So the relationship is broken. I said in the beginning, the Christianity is based on relationship. Relationship with God, relationship to one another, our neighbor is our wife and our children, our family and our community. Lust is never satisfied. At the height of Solomon's fame, he had 300 wives and 700 concubines. And we call him what? What man?
Wife.
So, that itself a misperception, you know. If you want to be a good husband and a good president, have 300 and 700, you know. So you will be wise as Solomon. Maybe you're not wise because you have one. Lust is about a physical connection. Love is about an emotional connection. We have to understand that. God planted the love as an emotional connection. You know? Now if I ask one of you, what is the feeling you have right now? Can you tell me that? A lot of men cannot tell that feeling. You know, I train pastors. I say, what is the feeling you have right now? I don't have any feeling. Huh? You don't? How come? Your right brain is not working. Only left is working. Emotional connection. We are disconnected emotionally from the society in our family. The emotional connection is so important. That's what the earlier slide I said, that from the beginning, they have to have the hug and the kiss and the relationship for the parents. That emotional growth is so important. Today, they call it emotional intelligent. But God has already told us that. Love one another and have the connection. That is the most important thing, the emotionally intelligent. Okay, lust feels like you intensely want to have sex with someone. Love feels like you want to have sex with someone and be emotionally close to them too. Love means you want to spend time with your partner and listen to his or her needs and emotions, feel connected. You also are interested in meeting your beloved friends. Lust means you are more interested in having sex than having intimate conversation or meeting the person's friends. So, oh yeah, go ahead.
Could you roll back that next one, please?
Next one?
Okay.
You want to take a picture?
Yes, sir.
You ask the organizers, and or if you give me an email, let me send you, if you want, this presentation, okay?
Okay.
And that one, I know some of you are taking notes, but tell, please tell them, I will give to them, let them send to you. They already have information in US, you know. That is the best way to do it, I think. And sex addiction. We are going into it and we have another 20 minutes. Let me cover this. Sex addiction, also called hypersexuality. What does hyper mean?
Over.
Huh?
Over.
Hypo? Lower. So we don't have hypo. We have hyper. That's where the problem is. It has to do with anxiety, shame, feeling anxious and shame. I wanted to have it now, and I don't know where to go for it, so let me get into the car and go and look for somebody. You see? Hyper! I couldn't find there, let me go to the other place. Oh, it's not there, so at least let me go to the internet and see it. You see that? The hyper, the anxiety, I want it now. That was the Satan's problem. I want it now, honey! Oh, okay. You're in trouble in the marriage already. Yeah, I want it now. You see the problem? Yeah, it is. It is the I. It is the I. It is the most evil thing in the world. Just one word. Letter, you know. I, that's one letter. So it is hypersexuality, hypersexual disorder. So sexual compulsivity and compulsive sexual behavior disorder is a behavior focused sex. Addiction is a disease. If you have sex addiction, it is a disease. It is a disease. So sexual addiction is a disease. You do the same thing and again and again and again, and there is something happened to your body. For example, I will take it simple. Something happened to me, I am sad. Now I'm sitting on the sand for 1 week. I'm sitting on the boat for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. What will happen to me? Yes. He said the depressed, the word depression. Sadness turned into depression. Which means my neurochemical has changed in the brain. You see? What God has created, we imbalanced it. You see? So the change happened. Now we don't know what to do, how to bring back the change in the cube. So we needed now help. Somebody to reset everything to us. So addiction is a disease because there is a neurochemical change has taken place in the head because you have been doing it again and again and again. More specifically, sex addiction is dysfunctional preoccupation with the sexual urges and fantasy and behavior. You're doing it again and again and it became an addiction. Usually involving the obsessive pursuit of a non-intimate sexuality. Non-intimate. No life in it, no feeling in it, no emotion in it. Pornography, sexual and enormous sex and prostitution. There is nothing in it. So that is the problem with it. Sexuality is given as a gift by God to have that relationship and connection. Now we have moved away from it. We just want to do it because I wanted it now. According to the researchers, sex addiction is obsession with sexual thoughts, feelings or behaviors they are unable to control. The pole opposite of ego. But God has been dying to self. That's where the Bible comes in theology, you know. Dying to self. Dying to Paul brought it. Why did Paul talk about dying to self? Because he was an egoistic guy. What kind of work he was doing? Anybody knows what Paul was doing? Yeah, he was in the south side of somewhere, you know, with a gun in his hand, killing everybody. You know, his ego was, oh, I did one, boom, I did two, I did three, oh, 20 Christians I killed. He knows about the ego. He knows about the sin. So he said, I have to die myself. That's what he came to Jesus. Jesus died. And he learned dying is more important than living. You see that? That is where the Christianity comes in. The biblical model for Christian sex on the brain. Sex triggers the release of a cocktail of chemical in the brain. I really already talked about a little bit about it. So, the truth is that liking sex a lot doesn't make you a sex addict. I think you should like that. Amen. Yeah. It is not me, you know. Because sometimes pastors preach that and we hear that. That's not true. And just cheating or engaging with prostitute or other antisocial behavior doesn't make you a sex addict. But it is a sin. But it is a sin. It doesn't make you an addict. That means you don't have a disease. It is a sin. If you are a sex addict, just like a heroin addict, you are at the point where you are having sex, not because you are deriving pleasure from it, but because you need to do that just to fall asleep at night and face the day, not to have withdrawal symptoms. And you will see the next little more. So, while true sex addiction is rare, it is one of the many real addictions that stems from the way the human brain feels or doesn't feel the pressure. You see that? What is the addiction means? Like the addict, sex addicts uses their addiction not to have a good time, but to numb out what? Escape from their stress and emotional and discomfort, including the pain of underlying emotional, psychological issues like depression, anxiety, unresolved earlier life, trauma, like that. So a lot of people, all of us are wounded in many different ways. And sometimes we get wounded, we don't know. We have learned behavior, like I said already. If you have this problem, one way is to go and do this. So a lot of people have learned that. From their community, from the movie, and all this they gathered, like at the beginning of the presentation I told you. Now when they have something, they don't want to sit and cry and feel the feeling. But they want to express it in the wrong way. That is where this killing and the shooting also comes. The anger is there, they don't know how to express it. They express through the weapons and kicking and killing. If not anything, they slam the door, slam the refrigerator door, kick the dogs and all that stuff, you know. Because that's the expression. Now here, they have all this feeling, they're expressing through in the wrong way, the wrong places. And you do it more and more, you don't know what to do, and it is a problem. That is a problem. That's how you get into trouble more and more. So sexual addiction is not about having fun. It is about controlling what one feels. Sexual addiction is distracting the feeling they feel. Sex addiction is a real mental health disorder. You have to understand. Now, I told you earlier, it is a learned behavior from the beginning. And eventually you continue to do it. And it becomes a sin. And your neurochemical changes happen. It becomes a disorder. You see? A simple, you know, it is a simple thing, you know. You know, Bernie Sanders just had a heart-related, I don't know what surgery he had or what happened. They are keeping it secret, whether it's an open heart or artery, we don't know. But how did he have it? Just because he's walking around? Yeah, it was built for a long time, isn't it? You know, he's walking too much. Shouldn't that help him to have good health? No, that hurt him walking. Why? It's already filled here. Because it is collected for a long time, it is in his genes, and it came. So all this comes to an end, a disorder, like heart disease, like a diabetes. Now, I was diagnosed with diabetes when I was 33 years old. My family had it.
You said diabetes?
Yeah, yeah. Type 2. The reason is that my family had. My family died. They are all Hindus. And I had it when I was young. So it is also in our genes. We can pass on to some of the things that we have within ourselves, our children. So we need to be careful when you become a disorder. We have to be careful. Sex addicts, common experience. 70% they feel ashamed. They have low self-esteem, mental health issues, loss of relationship, and chemical dependency. In other words, so when they have this, they have to have some kind of remedy, and they always do it in the wrong way. So what causes sex addiction? There is no trait known to the sex addiction. The first one is probably the mood. Sexual compulsion may be a way to cope with emotional pain and stress. We talked about a little bit. One study, 96% participants said, specific mood triggers their sexual compulsion. Yeah, specific mood. I am depressed, I need a woman. I'm really upset, I need to somebody to talk, so I'm going to this woman. You see that? The most common triggers were sadness and depression, happiness and loneliness. It is funny that happiness is there too, no? It's not about sadness. When you have a lot of money and you're happy, you know what happened recently, no? One big guy, you know, multi-billionaire, he killed himself finally in the prison, no? A lot of money, a lot of happiness for him. He killed himself finally. Yeah, they don't know what to do. They want to express. That's what we need, that loving relationship and kindness, that we could sit and talk. That is what it is, means. Your wife is the key. That is where we all have to learn one skill. You know what the skill is? Listening. Listening. Who listens now? Nobody listens. We don't even preach a sermon on listening. Yeah. Nobody listens. Yeah. Listening. What is that? Talking, I know that. You know? Talking, I know that. So research suggests people with sex addiction may have neurochemical differences in their brain's reward center and history of abuse also. So when you do it and again, there's a disorder, then you might also have a history of abuse. Childhood, a large majority of people with a sex addiction report history of abuse, 70% report physical abuse, 81% report sexual abuse, 90% report sexual abuse. And the treatment for this is individual therapy. So if you are having an issue or your friend or a family member, look for therapeutic intervention. But make sure you find somebody who embraces spirituality. Okay? 2 weeks ago, one of my clients went to see a psychologist. I referred, I didn't have time to do it. So I said no, because they are closer to me. It's a conflict of interest. I referred as soon as it's in Georgetown, by the way, and he is from the Georgetown University PhD. As soon as she went, he said, looked at her. He listened to 1 hour, 1.5 hour to her and said, my suggestion is you divorce your husband. And she came running, Pastor, he told me to divorce my husband. I said, he's a stupid guy. He may have a PhD, you know. That doesn't mean anything. If you don't have God, you're stupid as hell, you know. That's what I'm sorry for the word, you know. Group therapy. Group therapy. Being with a group of people, you will learn from your peers. What has done to harm them, how it had helped them too. Family therapy, going with your father, mother, brothers and sisters, and talking. How is this created in the family? Everybody learned from this. Behavioral cognitive therapy, changing your thought process, how you think, always negatively toward this guy. And sometimes you need medication if you are depressed, anxiety, prescribed medication. And you need education and relearning. And of course, I put the trust in God and self at last. It's not because it is last, it is the foundation. Mm. It is the foundation. Yeah. If you trust in God and you have good theology of sex, it is a gift from God, and evil has destroyed, distorted it, I need to work on it to make it more holier. And when you have that concept, the things are changing in your life. Jesus clearly stated, the core problem from within, out of heart of man comes evil thoughts, sexual immorality, adultery and sensuality. You see that? Within, out of our heart of a man. This is the heart is the issue. Heart. Our mind is the issue. In other words, when it comes to sexual sin, Jesus says, our core problem is not what we have done, but what was done to us. We cannot say, hey, they did this to me, they told me. No, it is what resides within us. What I believe, what is in my heart, what is in my head. And that is more important. That is what we need to walk about. Take responsibility for our behavior and to have a transformation and change in our life. With sexual sin, real change can only begin with genuine repentance. A change of the heart. Repentance is not recovery, by the way. Repentance is not a recovery if you are addicted. Repentance goes along with recovery process. I say this is a sin and I need to change. I need to love the Lord. Let me get some help now. How to change it? To go through the process, you know. That is very, very... I'm going to go quickly a list here. Addictive sexuality, these are some of the symptoms you have. Feel shameful. Is it illicit, stolen or exploitive? Compromise values. Draws on fear for excitement. Reenacts childhood abuse, if we have been abused. Disconnects from oneself. Creates worlds of unreality. Is self-destructive and dangerous. Uses conquest of power. And healthy, addictive, is still addictive. Serves to medicate and kill the pain. Is dishonest or requires a double life. Becomes a routine, grim or joyless. Demands perfection, sophisticating, demanding, clinging or disengaged. I want to say become a routine, becoming dishonest lifestyle. I had a client come in to see me. The wife is a vice president of nursing. Very high position in the hospital. And she comes very late. He is there. He cleans the house. He does everything. He is not highly educated. He does everything. And then when she comes, she's really tired. He talks to her. She goes to bed. Once he goes to the office like he's working, as soon as he goes and sees that sleep, he gets his car, he goes whole night looking for prostitutes. A Christian, by the way. And finally, he got caught. The wife referred to me. And he said, I have been doing it from childhood, this. This is not nothing new, but it is a secret. The dishonest lifestyle that we have created, you know, becomes a routine, grim or joyless, demands perfection, sophisticated, demanding and clinging and discharge. So, here's the healthy ones. Foster positive self-worth, has no victims, operates within a value system. Where this comes from, value system?
Bible.
It's come from Bible, Christian. This is where it is important for our children to go to schools, Seventh-day Adventist, our schools, Christian schools, whatever the Christianity is, you know. Uses intimacy for excitement. cultivates a sense of being an adult, promotes a sense of self. I should also say, just because they go to Adventist, they don't learn good behavior, you know. We have had issues in our own school, this kind of behavior, and from the principal to the teachers to all nonsense, you know. So there are a lot of sin is sin everywhere, you know. But it doesn't mean we should avoid it. There are a lot of good Adventist schools. Cultivates a sense of well-being an adult, promotes a sense of self, expands reality through being in touch with the present, relies on safety. Is mutual, consensual, and equal. The word equal. The ego is not there, you know. Equal, sharing. Foster self-regulation of emotion, connection, talking to one another. Originate integrity and authenticity. Very, very important. Jesus has a sense of integrity and authenticity. And it is spontaneous, fun, and playful. And it is progressive, not impulsive. That's what it means. Except imperfect, is respectful of boundaries, and accepting intimate. So, this is my presentation. I have 7 minutes. I was afraid whether I will finish it or not, you know. Yeah, I was. Any questions, brother? You still have your question?
Yes.
What is the question?
Questions.
I don't want you to avoid and run away, you know. Okay.
You were talking earlier about the importance of allowing a child to feel comfortable with his or her sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
You gave the example of a boy saying, touching his penis, and mother saying, no, 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 no. And you're saying to the mother, no, let him do that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the concern I have is when a young person begins to experience too much in that area, it could very well lead to fornication. Mm-hmm. And the lifestyle that we know is outside God's will.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be a line there somewhere.
Okay, what is your question?
What is the line? I mean, I don't think that we can allow a child just to go hog wild with being, quote-unquote, comfortable with their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be tempered. How would you, so my question is, how would you counsel a parent in providing the guidelines to go this far with your sexuality, but no further?
Mm. Well, there is no boundaries in sexuality. You came a little late, I think, if I'm not mistaken, in my presentation. Am I right?
I'm sorry.
You came a little late for my presentation.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. So, the beginning of the presentation, I said this is a connection. The sexuality is a love and relationship. They have to experience love and kindness. The illustration I gave is my daughter's, my grandson's illustration. No, no is... You don't tell the child no, no, but you guide them through the process. But he's a 5 months, you can't guide through. But you don't say no, it registers in his mind, you know. But you take your hand away, you find a way to cover it so that he's not having access to it, you see. So your question is, how do you counsel? You don't counsel the parents. If you are not trained, you don't counsel. If you know the theology of sex in the Bible, and you tell the love and the kindness, if they are misbehaving, and you find definitely a person who is trained in this field to help them to understand where this behavior is coming, where is the root is, how did they learn it, what happened to their life. And you go through the process very carefully, help them to understand they have learned it, like in my beginning of the presentation, in the wrong place, in the wrong way, and what is the right thing. That is how you do it. So always it's a process rather than fixing it. It is not a McDonald's sandwich. You see? It's a process. It takes time. It builds. But it is a very hard thing if our children are learned in the wrong place, wrong time. That is the reason I'm talking. We have to relearn ourselves if we haven't learned it in order to help other people. We need to go through that. It's not like other issues. It's not like keeping the Sabbath, you know? This is a very complicated thing that we have to... Yes, Mark?
This kind of piggybacks on this gentleman's question, which is, we all believe that sex between husband and wife isn't bad, but it is private.
Mm-hmm.
How much privacy do we need to afford?
100% privacy.
In other words, how normal is it for adults to be not clothed in front of little kids, and at what age do the little kids get when it's not appropriate to be this?
Well, I'll tell you that this is an old story, but I will tell you. The age is 10 years old. He is the holy man, came from America to my country, Sri Lanka, as a missionary. Okay? And he's a big shot in Sri Lanka. He has two boys. They had one beautiful girl working for them. Beautiful girl. My country girl. Beautiful girl. And the two boys, who are from America, the father has this American ladder too, you know. They kept the ladder, and both of them climbed while this young girl is bathing and they're looking at. And the girl doesn't know. For a long time this is happening. It's a curious city they are having, because they have seen it somewhere. Let me finish. I will come back to you, please. Okay. So, the curiosity is in there. So, should we be open, naked? No, I won't suggest that way. Should you hug and kiss your children, your wife? Yes, you should. And if you discover and you talk to them rather than reprimanding them. You know, how did you learn? Where did you learn? The tone of the voice is important. Where did you learn that? Jomo, tell me. I saw you and mommy. He won't say it. You know, I don't know. I don't know. But if he asks, honey, it's funny that you are climbing on the ladder and doing it's wonderful. You know, tell me. Oh, you know, Dad, how I learned? One day I came home, the door was open, you forgot to close it. I saw mommy was dressing. I said, oh, that's funny, I want to see what it is. And mommy, after that, closed it. So I thought, I'll see it here. You have to talk and understand the root of evilness. How where they learned it. It's a learned behavior, like I told in the beginning. And it's a process. No fixing. It's not a sermon that fixes. You know, there's some drug addiction they found in my church. The elder said, you have to preach a sermon on drug addiction. They have to stop it. I said, it doesn't work that way. I said, let me work on it. I will bring a counselor and we'll have a little retreat for these young people to learn about it. It's not only for them, for their future life too. Yes, Brother Michael.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question. As part of your counseling, how important do you add in the 12-step program that they do for Alcoholics Anonymous? Is that something that's a part of your counseling, and do you feel that is relevant?
You know, it's an excellent question. I tell you, I don't do much counseling because right now I'm a pastor. Not earlier I had time to do it. So more than 3 sessions I don't have it. And it is harder to do it in a church setting because I know them. It is kind of a messed up, you know, relationship. So I refer them. But 12-step is excellent, wonderful. 12-step is for even for not only alcohol, but it has been now revised for the drugs and eating disorder and so on. It's wonderful. I think it's very good. And I think there are 12 steps now revised in spiritual settings. So we need to find those settings. Okay? Thank you. Blessings to you. Take care.
We hope this presentation from the Maryland Men of Faith has been a blessing to you. Your feedback is welcomed. Please visit us at mmof.org.